Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Okay, so since going to be gone tomorrow, I'll give a talk on today, which is Thursday. So it's not a Saturday night talk, it's a Thursday night talk. And thinking, reflecting on what will be helpful for the community to kind of focus on as we prepare for the rains retreat, which has finally arrived. Apparently someone said we've been preparing for the rains retreat since February. Not true. We've been preparing for it recently. And going to the rains retreat, what are the things to focus on? I think it's the usual stuff. It's a time for looking inwards, a bit more restraint, cultivating the happiness of the mind. And yeah, and I think the happiness of the mind and the happiness of the five sense world is it's very different. And this is something that it takes a bit getting used to. Happiness of the mind, the happiness of the sixth sense world. It's a bit more subtle, a bit more quiet. And but the more you indulge in the sight, five sense world of, you know, sight, sound, taste, smell, and touch, the more you're dependent on that hit. And the more you depend on the comfort of the five sense world, the less you can perceive the happiness of the mind. And that's why sometimes it's I think the teaching in the fourth tradition is to go without. It doesn't look very interesting. Certainly doesn't sound very fun. You're kind of depriving the body of its happiness, of its comfort. And from a certain perspective, it sounds like a bit of a mortification of the body. But I think this is where it's a refined path. It takes getting used to. And I think like the difference between like the happiness of the mind and the happiness of the body, I was thinking like, you know, what simile to bring up so people understand. I was thinking on the car. We're talking about, well, maybe it's like if you like heavy metal music, really loud, really kind of coarse music, then it's harder to pay attention to the refined music, like classical music. But then someone says, no, well, that's not true. I like heavy metal and I also like classical. So maybe that's not a good simile. Well, something like this. I thought, well, maybe something like, notice when you're sitting in a very bright room with kind of artificial light, very bright, and then you go into the dark outside, it takes a while before the mind adjusts, before the eyes adjust to the surrounding of the softer light of the moon, or just the softer light in darkness. And yeah, so it's the same with the more we really get into the five sense world, the more we create, trying to be as comfortable with the body as we can. You know, now that it's cold, we want to just, you know, the right amount of lots of blankets, lots of thermals, lots of heating. And so, sure, there's a certain amount of comfort that the body needs. But I think And no matter what you do with the body, I notice, it's never that comfortable. As you get older, it's always just kind of not quite hit it. You know, it's always a bit, bits and pieces of the body. It's always a bit cold. No matter how much you rope up, how many socks you wear, how many beanies you wear. It's always a bit cold somewhere. And it never has that enough. And no matter how many hours you sleep in bed, how many hours you lie, you're always never as rested as you like to be. Yeah. So sometimes it is just kind of call the body's bluff. So, you know, yeah, enough's enough. You look after it, you feed it, clothe it. But it's never going to be perfect. And you focus the rest of your time just, you know, being at peace. But the body, that's never quite comfortable. That's just way too sensitive. That's always a bit too hot, too cold, too uncomfortable for different reasons. A bit too tired. And yeah, it's just the way it is. And the more you kind of call its bluff, just leave it alone, focus on other thing. And you find that, yeah, sometimes meditation is, it's when the body's not completely comfortable, it's a bit more bright, even more awake. I think like Lupo Tui has a saying, you know, convenient but troublesome. As monasteries developed, get more support, you get lots of things that make it more convenient. Electricity, fridges, heaters, aircon maybe, bits and pieces, internet. Everything's very convenient. But then is it really for the... does it make your mind more peaceful to have all these conveniences? Or is it, you know, having things, you know, a bit more difficult, a bit tougher, a bit harder, not so convenient? There is more stillness. It allows the mind to practice, you know, to straighten the muscles of contentment. That, you know, that's saying, no, it's good enough. It's not perfect, but it's good enough. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, you know, there is always the argument that to get things comfortable, and then the meditation would be better. There's an argument some people make, well, you know, sometimes if it's too hot, you can't meditate. That you have aircon, then it's a bit more comfortable, and the mind will settle down better. So some monasteries, yeah, you know, some places you have en suites in your hut, you have heater, you have aircon to make it really comfortable. But I don't know whether the, you know, the meditation gets any better because you have all this modern comfort. I think sometimes it's just the opposite, that having things a bit more rustic, a bit more difficult, allows you to strengthen these muscles, like I said, of, you know, of being okay when things aren't perfect. Being okay when it's a bit hot. Being okay when it's a bit cold. You find that, yeah, you know, you have that ability. You have the resilience. Just be with things when they aren't perfect. Because in the five sense world, they will never be perfect. Always bit in pieces. They don't fit together. Bits and pieces that are going wrong. And as you cultivate these muscles of, you know, being with things that aren't perfect, being with things that are, you know, that aren't completely okay, it's the same skill that you bring to the meditation of, you know, being okay when the mind is not as bright as you like it to be, being okay when the breath is not as clear, as beautiful as you like it to be. Really, just to stay with things when it's unpleasant, not to run away. The ability not to always, you know, seek out the most comfortable things, position, to make the mind comfortable. And I think that's why this, you know, in the first tradition is to kind of encourage, you know, to be more restraint, a bit more ascetic, the Dutanga practices, you know, eating, you know, once a day, eating from the bowl. It's just kind of the encouragement, just not to focus on the happiness of the five sense world, to relinquish that, and allowing the energy of the mind to, you know, to become brighter, to strengthen, to increase. And sometimes you can see that, but I guess, but it's, yeah, it does, but anything, it's just a balance. Because, you know, if you, the mind wants happiness, and if it doesn't get, you know, and it'll take the happiness of the five sense world, that's the only thing it knows. And for most people, that's all they know, happiness of the five sense world. You know, happiness of food, happiness of movies, happiness of friendship, happiness of sleep, happiness of having a comfortable house, nice couch to sit on. And that's fair enough. But I think as monastic, you know, as meditator, people who kind of, you know, looking to train the mind, you know, okay, you may not be getting your eighth jhanas, but hopefully the mind is a bit more still and you get to feel the sense of that. The happiness of the mind, what does it feel like when the mind is bright, when the mind is still, when there's a lot of energy in the mind. You feel, yeah, okay, yeah. This is something that's much more stable. This is something that leads something. This is something that leads outside of the samsara, the cycles of birth, the cycles, you know. And a lot of times, you know, yeah, the momentary hit of the five sense world. But the happiness of the mind is the only thing that will come slowly, something we have to develop and train and work towards. If we have the courage to move away slowly from the happiness of the five sense world, to not get, you know, to not focus, get obsessed about making things perfect on the external sense. Because sometimes, you know, when you look at it, yeah, you know, the happiness of the five senses are so fleeting. You know, taste, good food, you swallow, whatever it is, Allah, however enjoyable it is, it's gone within 15, 20 minutes. Actually, you look at it closely, the taste of the food, when you taste it on your tongue, when you swallow it, that's the end of that. Happiness of different things. So quick and short, and it's gone. But it allows, you know, it kind of wears away the mind, because we're always chasing after pleasant things, moving away unpleasant things. After a while, you know, the mind is a bit, it doesn't have that strength to withstand unpleasant stuff. Or it's reflected, yeah, of course, you know, when it's really, really hot, right? It's not comfortable, but nobody dies from being too hot. It's the same with the cold. When things are a bit cold, yeah, it's uncomfortable. You like it a bit warmer, but you're not going to die from having a bit, you know, being a bit too cold. And just ability just to be with it. Okay, coldness feels like that. Being too hot feels like that. It's not the end of the world. And ability just to be with unpleasantness, you know, builds up a lot of strength, a lot of courage, that we know we can be unpleasant. First with the physical experience, but now also with the mental experience. You know, even though, you know, we don't get to organize the world as much as we like to. We don't organize the world according to wishes and desires. Lots of unpleasant things arises in the mind from time to time. And it's okay. But just to be with unpleasant, it's not going to kill you. You might not like it, sure. But no one's died from being a bit grumpy, a bit irritated, not getting your way. Where is this talk going? No idea. I think basically it's kind of an encouragement to be with an unpleasant, to instead of running away from it, just investigate it, to learn from it, to get to know it. The unpleasantness of the body feels like that. Being in an unpleasant situation feels like that. But also, training the mind to always look for the positive. Even if you are very, very cold, you're still alive. You still have a good health. It's not the end of the world. And the coldness will disappear. The sun will come up eventually. Or at least you have the opportunity to put more warmth up if you have to. But just being with the cold investigator, what does that feel like? Yeah, slightly unpleasant, but not the end of the world. So this cultivate, there's this kind of encouragement just to investigate different states, to really know. Is that just, you know, running away from the cold and wanting to, or complaining? You know, where do you feel the cold? In your hands, your head, your shoulder, and your bones? And really, are you going to get sick from it? You're going to die from it? Not really. There's a story I was going to tell. I can't remember it now. Anyway, hopefully it'll come back to me. No, with the training of the mind, you know, is the same with the body, I say over and over again. It's just kind of strengthening it. You only strengthen it if you kind of, you work at it. You know, the mind doesn't become strong by itself. You have to focus on it. You have to do things that allow it to have some resilience. And one of the best things to strengthen the mind, allow it to have more kind of courage, unshakable strength, is to test it, to push always, you know, it's a balance, to push your against the what you think or your comfort zone, to be outside that every so often. Yes, we can test with it by not sleeping as much as we think we need it, eating a bit less, being a bit cold, experiencing with the heart. It's only through pushing through our what we think are limitations that we realize, yeah, so much of our limitation is self-imposed. We think we're like this, but we're so much more than that. And after a while, yeah, you do have the strength that, yeah, you can't be with the unpleasant. No one says it's good, but it's not going to kill you. To eat food that's different. To have you, so you not always have things your way. That's what it was. So maybe this story has to do with the, those Christians. Those Christians, martyrs or saints in the Middle Ages. I think there was someone said that they also have good meditation, but they used to push the body to the limit, where they make the body so uncomfortable that that the mind would let go. And you see where that is going. You know, some people would stand on a column and not eat for many, many weeks. But they would wear this belt, and every few days they would tighten it harder, put in a new notch in. You keep tightening the belt over and over again. So that the stomach can be super small, or they cut into the skin where you can see there's some maggots crawling around the wound. Or they would obviously would lie on bed of nails or wear hair shirts or something, whip themselves in the back, obviously out of devotion for God and Jesus. But also as a way to kind of, you know, yeah, kind of push the body's limits. And I think after a while, because the body is so uncomfortable that the mind does let go, these kind of mystics would get really, really deep meditation. And obviously, you know, the lesson to take from that is, yeah, it's when the body is too uncomfortable, the mind will let go. But you don't want it to set up the situation where things are so unpleasant all the time, especially when you're sitting in meditation, that you don't want to meditate. But I think the main point is that, yeah, you know, occasionally, you know, kind of push the limit of what we think is bearable. And you investigate. And one of the main things, yeah, I love the meditation master always encourages you to just to kind of, you know, one of it is just investigate pain in the body. You know, relationship to it, what we think it is, what does it look like? And as long as we investigate, have mindfulness, you'll see that, you know, sometimes the pain does go away by itself. Sometimes it changes. You're not as painful as it seems. When there's kind of the ability just to hold unpleasantness, the ability to be with things. So finally, yeah, the pain is there, but it's not as painful, which is kind of a strange thing. But with any of the teaching, it's not something you can think your way to. Something which you kind of have to put into practice and feel what's it like. Put into practice. You know, and it's always about kind of experimenting, pushing our boundaries, pushing, you know, being in slightly uncomfortable, being outside of a comfort zone. And see what it feels like. So it's not like a statement about negating all comfort. It's not always about, you know, taking the worst food and letting go of your favorite food or having cold water, cold showers, the rest of the rains, or sleeping on the floor all the time, concrete bed. No, but it's about, you know, every so often, just gonna push and see what happens. Have fun, do have a cold shower and see what happens. Whether you get sick or you die from it, probably unlikely. Yeah, because I think, you know, once you give, you know, you go down the path of making things more comfortable, making things more convenient, it's a slippery path because the mind gets weaker and weaker and you can never be comfortable enough. You go down the path of having more stuff for evening drinks. You have your cheese, and you have to have the cottage cheese, and you have a certain special type of cheese, then you have your onions, then you have your bits and pieces, sunflower seed, and you have to fry it properly, you add this and that, and it's like, yeah, it's never enough. So it's another thing to have. But more to me, but more comfortable. So sometimes it's good just to kind of cut all that back and say, you know, you don't really need that. Sure, it's always nice. But that's kind of the slippery path of having more things. And it's the same, I think in monasteries, you know, yeah, there's talk of, you know, certain monasteries having air conditioner so that you get better meditation. Possibly, the first week you might have better meditation when things are really, really hot. But you can't, you know, be with the hotness. Then really, how deep can your meditation be? You can't, you know, be with the sweating body. Be with, you know, kind of slightly uncomfortable position. So always relying on the external conditions just to help your mind to be more comfortable. And you always kind of get that from the US as well. The perfect meditation chamber, the perfect store that will launch into jhanas, no problem. Pay enough money, you get everything. Perfect cushion. Or it's perfect sound wave or something. Make some kind of earphones, headphone that you, some kind of alpha, mega waves or something that gets you launching into jhanas. And it's like, no, that doesn't work that way. I'm sure in a few years they'll give you a pill. Some pharmaceutical will give you a pill, give you the right ingredients for you to have a great samadhi. And it's, you know, it's still going the wrong direction. It's still focusing on the physical aspect. And it's about the mind. You know, this practice of contentment, being with things, allowing things to be. That's where happiness lies. That's where peace lies. That's where it was. And drawing in Lumpo Samhita, Ajahn Samhita's teaching, you know, as people of the world, we go for the exciting stuff. We look at a room, we don't look at space, because it's boring. We look at the people in it. The furniture, different things that feel the space. But really, space is the thing that brings peace, emptiness. It brings calmness. And it's the same as we go towards, you know, we think happiness is having things, right? Happiness is seeing things. Happiness is experience things. Happiness is having opinions and sparkling personality and charming. And then we get to a monastery and nothing happens and we get bored. But happiness, Buddha says over and over, many meditation masters say it over and over again, happiness is peace. Happiness is emptiness. That's the higher type of happiness. Right? So it's not having, not doing, but being with when nothing's happening. That's true happiness. Yeah, so it's a space. It's closer. Emptiness. That's where happiness lies. Yeah, so it's not having, but it's, you know, it's being content with not having. But people in the world don't want peace, right? They want, we all want, but sometimes people say they want peace, but then when they do get it, they come to a monastery and they don't have anything to do and they get bored and they run away. Some people go in the monastery, it's too quiet so they can't sleep and listen to the traffic noise, the noise of the world. And it's the same sometimes with the mind. You know, we're sitting here with nothing to do, but then we think of things to do to fill our days with, to fill the mind with. And sometimes it's normal. That's why people come and they say, well, you know, normally I thought I was really, really peaceful until I come to a monastery and then, you know, I can't watch the movie, can't listen to music. The mind starts to fabricate. I start to get really strong dreams, very vivid dreams. And it's true, to a certain extent, the mind is used to certain sense impingement. And when you go to a place that's not available, it will make us up its own entertainment. And you can see that. That's what the mind does. So it takes a while for the mind to slow down, for the mind to get used to, you know, stillness, peace, emptiness. And it's the same with the happiness of the mind. It's subtle. So in the beginning, it is. It takes a while just to kind of have the courage to renounce some sense pleasure, to make do with as little as you can. And over time, that strength comes in. You can be with unpleasant stuff. And then, after a while, there's stability. That your mind is even, no matter what the external circumstances. You find that less is more. Less is great. Emptiness is even better than less. Nothingness. Nothing moving, nothing going. Not looking for your special experiences. Not looking to achieve anything. Not looking to be anything, be anybody. You're allowing things just to happen. Just allowing things to come and go. And be peace. But whatever is happening, making peace with the things you have to do in the monastery, there's work to do, you put 100% into it, do as best as you can, out of gratitude and happiness, gratitude for the people who feed us, people who built the monastery. And when there's no work, you're quite happy to sit in your monastery, you sit in your kuti and do nothing. Yeah. Happy to be around people, but also happy to be by yourself. Yeah, it's flexibility to adapt to different circumstances. You're happy when the mind is bright and energy, but you're also happy when the mind is, you know, you're also content, at peace, when the mind is moves the other way. The mind is a bit grumpy, a bit negative, a bit discouraged, a bit drowsy. It's also okay. Just steadiness, just to be with things, just strength, to be. Not have to do and to move. So it's about this kind of ability to focus on the most subtle things, the space between things. Focusing on the peace, the not having things. Not having to be entertained, not having to get excited, not having to long for things, but being content, just be with things as they arise and fall away. Yeah, and the but also in terms of, like you said, you know, there is the happiness of having, nothing, happiness of doing, and it's good. Happiness of getting your way, happiness of being around, you know, what, getting your ways, getting your happiness of what being what you like, being away from what you disliked. Obviously, that brings a certain happiness, but the happiness of contentment is the higher of the two. Happiness of the mind. It's the more, the higher of the happiness of the senses. It's something that, something that's deep inside yourself. That's the happiness that doesn't depend on external condition as much. You have the strength of mind just to be with things. But then people say, well, in the end, you're still chasing after happiness. Sort of. But it is the gradual. So it's always going from the coarse to the refined. Sure, all happiness is conditioned, suffering, and not self. But until you get there, it's always going for the more refined, letting go of the coarse and going for the refined. But to go for the refined, you have to let go of the coarse. It's getting when you go upstairs, you have to let go of the downstairs. But yeah, then you can go upstairs. You move your hands away, your foot away from the bottom stairs, you never get to the top stairs. Yeah? And ultimately, there's no stairs. There's no you. So why are we talking about this? So there's no you, and there's no me, and there's no talk. So I leave it at that, okay?
Arahaṁ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṁ bhagavā Bhagavato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhamma Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Sanavaka Sangha Sangha Namo.